Thank you, Eric. And thanks again for staying with us until the end of this symposium. And I want to say thank you to the organizers. It's something that I think is like all the presentations we saw this morning, a lot of value from these long-term studies. And again, sometimes I hear some people say, what about new people getting involved and getting on board with some of these long-term studies? Eric and I and many others see the value in some of this data, and actually very helpful to get started sometimes, get a lot of this good data basically to get some publications and get something started early. So I think there's a lot of value there even for some of us a little bit earlier in our career. And again, like Eric mentioned, co-authors on this presentation today, he helped a lot in terms of gathering some of this data. Again, we talk a little bit about some of the how we keep the data. That's one of the challenges we see. He kind of dig some of the data all there and try to kind of combine and compile everything. Larry Marek was involved with this specific study for many years. So most of his career, he was continuing with this experiment in particular. So a few things that I would like to cover today in the time we have, just a little introduction, a little overview of the value of these experiments. And again, we already talked a lot about that, but also talk about the field experiment background, this study in particular. And a few things that I would like to share with you, some of the long-term trends that we are seeing with this experiment, and a little, basically a snapshot after 30 years time, what we are seeing in terms of the some of the measurements we have, some of the results, and a summary of what we of the presentation. And again, in terms of the value of long-term experiments, we already talked a lot about that, so I won't say much about that aspect. We do have a lot of value of having that time factor basically as a part of the experiment. We do have a lot of challenges to continue with some of these experiments, and again, many already talk about some of those challenges, but again, as we see the value over time, I think is something that we have to kind of remind ourselves again the type of benefit we're getting from maintaining some of these experiments. And this particular study, and I'll talk more about the design, but especially looking at some of the studies that this morning, this particular one I think is a little bit more simple, basically I think is kind of straightforward. It's a fertility study basically that was initiated in 72. So again, it's a little bit straightforward, but having that time factor basically as a part of that experiment I think is really what makes the difference. And sometimes that's something that we have to remind ourselves. Again, we look at the experiments, well, pretty straightforward fertility study, but what else is happening when we are adding the time component to that specific study. In terms of management practice, even if we are talking about simple management practices, what producers may be doing in the field, a lot of times we can only see those basically over a period of time. So it's really important, even simple practices, to look at over time and see how that may be changing. And again, going on the background of this particular study, was basically established in 1972. It's located in the Kansas River Valley Experiment Field. That's in northeast Kansas, near Topeka. The main soil that we have there is Eudora silt loam. That's basically how it's classified. But it's basically a floodplain type soil there with significant variability and very fine sand, actually, for the most part. So that's something to keep in mind. The design, again, it was basically initiated as a fertility study looking at N, P, and K. And again, this is probably pretty classic N, P, and K combination of studies that, I don't know, maybe you can still see some of those in the older publications. We don't see a lot of new studies, I think, combining these different nutrients, N, P, and K. Seems like nowadays we focus only on nitrogen, only on P, only on K, and we don't sometimes look at some of the interactions. And there are some that are still ongoing. For example, Alan Schlegel in Tribune has one that is providing excellent information in terms of the interaction of nitrogen and phosphorus, for example. And again, we just need to continue this kind of studies where we are looking at interaction of nutrients. This particular experiment have three levels of nitrogen, three levels of phosphorus, and two levels of potassium as a complete factorial, so we have all the interactions in a complete randomized design and four replications. In terms of the a little bit of the history of this experiment, again, started in 72, and for a period of time of about 10 years, the crop was basically continuous soybean, and treatments were basically applied every year. And this is very important to keep in mind because I think it provides a interesting background in terms of build-up of soil tests and so on, that we are still looking at some of that residual effects until today. But then the focus of the data that I would like to share with you today is basically the last 30 years from 83 to 2013. And in this time frame, the treatments were basically applied before corn. So we are moving into a treatment application every other year, basically. In terms of measurements, basically the main data that we can find is yield. Is something that we've been has been collected pretty consistently. We do have some missing data, and again, that's part of the challenge of some of these long-term studies, I think, especially as people change, people who manage it, the way we kind of manage some of this data is an issue in terms of how, what kind of information is collected and how is maintained the data. So, but it, for the most part, we do have a good record of yields every year, and soil sampling about every three years over the last 30 years or so. And again, we also do have some missing data, some gaps there, but again, for the most part, it's pretty complete data set there. There has been obviously some changes in terms of management, especially, for example, nitrogen sources. Initially as a nitrogen source as ammonium nitrate, later changed obviously to urea. Those are some changes over time. In terms of one of the perhaps also big changes is also in terms of the irrigation system. This was irrigated field, furrow irrigated from the beginning, that basically changed to sprinkler irrigation in 2001. And I think this is important, and I'll come back to this later as we are looking at some of the trends and long-term data from this study. And getting into some of the tendencies, some of the yields and data over time, again, just having this long-term trend, I think, is really a huge value already, just by looking at, without even getting into the actual treatments. Obviously, we can start to see some tendencies. This is corn yields. There seems to be some increase, obviously, in corn yields over time. And that's perhaps is due to some of the improvement in genetics, some other factors that we can think about. And again, I'm a soil fertility person, so I'm really interested on the treatments. But obviously, there are other kind of information coming from this data set, not just on fertility, but perhaps also other other type of information that will definitely be useful. And again, it's the same case that many of colleagues earlier talk about in terms of the different disciplines coming and using this kind of data. But here I have basically two combinations, basically non-nitrogen over time, obviously very low yield levels, 180 kilos of nitrogen. Here we have the consistently higher yield levels, but we have the two levels of phosphorus, 0 and 67 kilos. Not much difference early on in the life of this study, but approximately in 2000, we start to see that differentiation between the two levels of phosphorus application. And if we go back to the soil test levels, is where we start to see that drop in soil test, and obviously we start to see that benefit of phosphorus fertilizer application. We do have a lot of both Eric and I, we do a lot of extension activities, and this is the type, I think, of data that is a lot of value for producers, for them to really see how management can affect over time in terms of their potential response. And again, that's basically what I am emphasizing here, the response to phosphorus. In the case of corn, we can see that it's consistently showing up roughly around 2000. This is soybean, and this is a slightly different yield levels over time, and this actually, if anything, we are seeing a decrease in soybean yields, and this is really surprising. Obviously, I don't I don't want to show this to our soybean breeders very much. I don't think it's necessarily genetics. We're assuming there's an improvement in genetics, obviously, but what else is going on? And I guess that's a question. That's the beauty of this long-term type data. We can go back in history, basically over the years, and see what happens during that time in terms of management. First of all, again, looking at the fertility treatments, which is my main interest. In the case of soybean, we do see a differentiation of the two. In this case, the phosphorus response basically start to show up slightly later compared to the corn. And again, this is just right here is giving an information in terms of the critical value of soil tests for corn and soybean obviously are not the same. So we are talking about perhaps a lower critical value for the soybean compared to the corn. And again, that's something that definitely show here just by looking at this long-term data. There also seems to be a benefit from that nitrogen application that perhaps is providing some residual nitrogen to the soybean, and obviously the soybean seems to respond also to that nitrogen application over time. So again, really interesting data here in terms of what's happening. Other things that maybe what's going on with that lower yields of soybean, and this is something that we discuss a lot about with other colleagues. Eric, we sit down sometimes and we say, well, what's going on? I don't want to say that there's a mistake in terms of how we collect the data. It's just obviously a consistently lower yield level there. And we can start talk about some options, right? What happens around that time where we see that drop in yields? We did a change in irrigation system. Is there anything related to that, perhaps? And that's where, again, we can bring in some colleagues with different expertise. I'm not an irrigation engineer, but perhaps there could be something related to irrigation. Maybe talk up with some of the pathologies. Is there any perhaps more disease pressure coming from your sprinkler irrigation, perhaps that with the higher moisture in the canopy? And again, these are basically just questions. And I'm a soil fertility person, not necessarily my area of work, but certainly we can always ask these kind of questions from just looking at that data. Something that basically became more common in recent years in our region there in Kansas is the issue with sudden death syndrome. SDA is really becoming more of an issue for soybean. Perhaps there is some correlation to that as we are just looking at that long-term trend in terms of yields. Going back to the soil test levels and the interaction with our fertilizer treatments, pH, soil test phosphorus, and potassium here, and basically just comparing here basically 83 versus 2013, what happens there in terms of the effect of the treatments. Nitrogen application clearly affecting pH. And again, we're probably expecting to see this kind of effect from the fertilizer nitrogen application in terms of lowering that pH. But also something, again, going back to that interaction with other nutrients, what happens to soil test phosphorus? We do see a significant effect of nitrogen application to soil test phosphorus. And again, higher yield levels with nitrogen more likely is resulting in high removal rates from the soil for phosphorus. And again, that's clearly showing in this data. And obviously the application of phosphorus and potassium is affecting soil test level significantly as expected. And getting looking at some of that actual data, some of the treatment effects, we have basically the 2 years here, 83 and 2013, zero nitrogens and 180 kilos of nitrogen application. And again, in the case of soil pH, we do see that significant decrease in pH basically after 30 years in terms of the pH due to the fertilizer nitrogen application, something that obviously we didn't see here in terms of changes of pH without any nitrogen. Soil test phosphorus, and again, also we are talking about nitrogen application rates here, and again, something that I already mentioned a little bit. With the removal of yields, we are seeing a significant drop in soil test phosphorus, and even more so in the case of fertilizer and nitrogen application with, again, potentially obviously much higher yields and removal rates and affecting soil test phosphorus over time. Different application rates of phosphorus, Again, still comparing the 83 and 2013, obviously, again, with the higher level of phosphorus application, we do see a higher soil test level. But again, we do see over time also that drop even in the soil test, even with the application of fertilizer phosphorus. So again, a lot of very interesting data here. And in this case, I'm talking about basically the beginning, basically 83, and compare what happens 30 years later. But I think going back to the long term, to what happening over time is where it really makes things more interesting. And obviously, this is soil test phosphorus over time. No phosphorus application, we do get a significant decrease in soil test, and we are basically on the single digits at this point. That's pretty clear. Now, but even with the application of 67 kilos of phosphorus, we do see a significant decrease in soil test phosphorus. Roughly, again, around the year of 2000, more or less, where, again, perhaps if we go back and look at yield levels, and if you remember, soybean yield seems to decrease at that point, perhaps we are getting to a point where we're basically putting back basically what we are removing with that 67 kilos of P2O5. And if anything, maybe we are actually increasing a little bit. So, again, looking at this kind of data over time, is we really appreciate that kind of changes and what else is going on with crop yields and management, fertility management. More data that we collected. This is from last year, 2013. We decided that it would be nice to start to do a little bit more in-depth, a more detailed analysis, basically, of soil. In this case, we have profile a nitrate test. And again, just a combination of two treatments of nitrogen and phosphorus, 45 kilos of nitrogen compared to the 0 and 34 P2O5 versus the 180 nitrogen with the two different rates of nitrogen of phosphorus. Obviously, with the 45 kilos of nitrogen, very low, very, very low levels of nitrate, basically, in the profile. So, again, we are really below that optimum level of nitrogen, and residual nitrate is not really an issue, seems like, from this data. But, again, the dashed line here is basically the data that has phosphorus also, the 34 pounds kilos of phosphorus. And something that is, it's the opposite, actually. The dash is without any phosphorus. Going to the 180 kilos of nitrogen, obviously we are seeing more significantly higher levels of nitrate in the profile. And if anything, actually, maybe that nitrate is going even deeper than 120 centimeter. But look at the interaction again with the application of phosphorus. Putting that phosphorus in the as a part of the management system, we are seeing a much lower level of residual nitrate in the system. And again, this is not necessarily new. Other data from other places, for example, what Alan shows from Tribune, shows something similar as well. So goes back to the value of having that combined information of not just one nutrient in particular, but what happening when you are managing a couple nutrients, which is going to be basically what the farmer is going to be doing. And again, seems like we are not seeing a lot of this kind of studies, which, again, seems to be quite simple, but I think is providing very, very interesting information in the long term in terms of some of the interactions, not just for agronomics, but obviously also potential environmental factors when it comes to nitrate leaching, for example. Another aspect that we decided to include a little bit, again, when you talk to producers, the main question is really what's going on with the economics. And again, I'm not an economist, but I'll do my best here to kind of just put a little bit in terms of dollars, which, again, usually get the attention of producers pretty fast, usually, when you talk about that. And again, just what kind of data we use, the bars, basically corn and soybean grain price, and the different fertilizer sources here in terms of the lines, basically, for PK and nitrogen as well. So we use this kind of information to start looking at what happened over time with these different different scenarios and what kind of return, economic return, we may be seeing with the different management. And again, over time here, and this is actually using historic price, so basically the price that we have for each of those years, Obviously, 180 kilos of nitrogen is consistently better in terms of the economic return, and obviously not putting any nitrogen is certainly not a good option in terms of economics. So we're probably pretty close in terms of the economic optimum when we are using that 180 kilos of nitrogen here. Using more recent data, 2013, obviously the price of grain and fertilizers are a lot higher, so basically the difference still the same, but we start to see that huge difference basically between the different treatments, but again, still that may benefit coming from putting the optimum or close to optimum level of nitrogen, in this case 180 kilos over time. Now what happened to phosphorus, and this is again where we start to see how things also translate into the economics. Early on, basically nothing in terms of the economic benefit of putting that phosphorus. And again, perhaps not unexpected since we were not seeing any clear benefit, obviously, from in terms of yields from putting that phosphorus at high soil test levels. And again, that goes back also to producers in terms of showing high levels of phosphorus. Perhaps you don't need to, you need to manage your phosphorus fertility in based on that soil test level. But again, as we're getting closer earlier in the last few years, we start to see that again the economic benefit from putting that phosphorus as we are getting into much lower soil test levels. And using 2013 values again, basically the same type of things, just bigger differences with the difference in price. But again, nothing clear early on, and in recent years. Things really becomes more clear here in terms of the benefit of putting that phosphorus fertilizer. And I didn't talk too much about potassium, and I guess I should have mentioned that earlier. We really start with pretty high levels of potassium for this field, and until today, we're still above the optimum level of potassium. We have seen a significant decrease in soil test potassium, but it's still optimum. But in here, we basically have the economic return. We're using historic price and basically the 2013 price. And again, probably obviously not surprising, actually putting potassium fertilizer is worse than if we are not putting anything. Again, if you are not seeing a benefit from potassium fertilizer, obviously you're just adding a cost basically to the production in this case. An excellent tool also for education purpose, something that we really enjoy usually during the season. Just go and look around and see what kind of things you can see there. You start to see a lot of visual differences there in terms of treatments. But one thing in particular this year that I think it really caught our attention was something that we realized that some treatment seems to be having more issues with SDS than others. So Eric actually went there and started looking at the treatments, do some visual score, and something that was seems to be pretty consistent is the effect of phosphorus fertilizer and the severity of incidence of SDS. And again, I'm not a pathologist, but obviously probably makes sense if we have a much better nutrient level. Obviously, the tolerance to some of these diseases perhaps is going to be better if you compare to a crop that has some nutrient issues to begin with. But this is the actual data, and again, this is just from this year. Basically, the visual incidence of SDS. And again, with the higher level of phosphorus, we are seeing a much lower issue basically with SDS, and basically no other nutrient was significant with this situation this year. So again, these are the type of things when it comes to long-term studies that I think it really has a lot of value, is that we probably don't think about all the questions that we may have decades later. And again, we start with something perhaps rather simple, in this case a fertility study, and maybe we are to the point that we need to start bringing more people, pathologists, irrigation engineers, and people that maybe can help us perhaps explain some of these tendencies that we are seeing. So again, in summary, just a couple points again that I want to emphasize. Again, the initial objectives may not always be connected, obviously, to what we are seeing decade later. And I think that's, again, the beauty of the long-term study, and I agree with Dr. Peterson. Again, sometimes we just need to keep going, and that's again, the challenge that we see every time with these long-term studies is how long we're going to keep it. And actually, I think I remember we have a meeting with a group of producers a few years ago with Eric, and that question, we brought up that question, and I think most producers said that we just need to keep going and see what we can keep learning from these plots. And again, sometimes we don't even know what kind of information we may be getting decades later. This particular study was, again, pretty simple, in my opinion. Again, just a simple fertility study that was established many years ago. But again, having that time factor is really a key to start generating some excellent information that otherwise a just simple fertility study may not be able to show. Again, some of the continuous challenges that we have, again, one of the things that we, especially Eric, deal with a lot of this early on was data management. A lot of this old data has been kept in separate pages, piece of paper somewhere, and you need to try and collect that kind of information. I believe as we move forward, this will become less of an issue, obviously, as we have a more stable computer, cloud technology, and that sort of thing. We should be able to have the access to this data, and we should be able to manage this data in a much easier way rather than one person perhaps keeping it in one computer and in one folder. One of the things also that just kind of looking back and maybe thinking for the future as well is what kind of variable to collect every year. And that's also tends to be, I think, a challenge. In this particular experiment, we do have basically soil tests and yields. But looking back, it would be nice to have other kinds of information as well. And as we are thinking for the future, it would be nice to collect more information that perhaps somebody can use it in the future. But here's where we start to deal with issues like budgets, and how much we can actually collect is always a limitation. But again, the thing is we can always use the data later. That's something that I, again, looking back now and this information, you always wish you have something else to help explain some of the data you are seeing. So with that, that's basically what I have. And I think, I don't know if we have time for question, but...
Any questions for Dorvar?
Yes.
So with the pH going down due to the nitrogen applications, have you thought about adding lime to see, are the plots large enough that you can split with lime or anything?
And that's part of the challenge, I guess, in this case. I don't think when I obviously don't know what was the objective of the person who started earlier this study, but it's not big enough. The plots are not big enough. And my impression is that they probably started just to look at the fertility aspect and splitting and start doing things that others earlier discussed. I don't think it's a possibility for us.
So the reason I was asking the question, is it possible that the liming would help those soybean yields? Because they're... Maybe, but our low pH is still 6.5.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's not so low. So yeah. We're getting to an ideal pH finally.
Yeah. our irrigation water tends to add calcium
water.
So
yeah.
All the plants are irrigated?
Yes, sir. Sprinkler irrigation, yes.
Start that furrow, now it's a sprinkler irrigation.
So were your phosphorus, which you had 34 and 67, which would be 30 and 60 pounds per acre. So is that pounds of P2O5 or pounds of P?
P2O5.
Okay.
Pounds of P2O5. Actually, it's a kilo, so it's 30 and 60 pounds of P2O5.
So in P, it'd be divided by 2.29.
Yes. And that is something that, and I guess Eric is really the one that managed the study, and we did have some interest, actually some people looking at soil management in the past was interested in coming and taking more samples and looking at some of those effects, but I don't know if we have anyone else do anything later.
We're looking for people interested, and here's an opportunity. I think that's one of the reasons we're trying to present some of this data, long-term studies, make people more aware. There's a lot of these out there.
And I think one thing that I think people are, as we have, to be honest with you, one of the challenges with this, and Eric did an excellent job, is really to put everything in order in terms of the data. That was a big issue with this particular study. It was there for, you know, basically 40 years, but a lot of missing data, things were not in order. But now I know that there are a lot of interest, for example, from Ag Econ colleagues to come and look at some of the historic values. I believe one student is looking at something like that. So having that data there, I think, will certainly start to get the interest of people. Yes?
We have, in Alabama, we also have some very old full fertility experiments that go back to 1928, in fact, and seven that go back to 1954. And we've looked at this phosphorus phenomenon also, and those we have phosphorus variables. And actually, we went 15 years without applying any more phosphorus. And we did not see soil test phosphorus change, hardly any, with continuous cropping. And that surprised me that it didn't change, but you had a rather dramatic change there. I'm wondering if it might relate to the soil extractant that you're using. We use the malic one of the weak acid, which pulls out a lot of your calcium carbonates and other calcium phosphates, and you use the break.
Yes,
that could be a shift in the source of the form of phosphorus in that soil over time rather than actual.
It's possible that some of that is related to that, and we started basically, the data we have was Bray, and later is Melic 3, is what we've been using for this. But we also started.
Which extractants in there? Because that can explain.
Yes, we did have a switch. We did have a switch there, and that's one part of it, I guess it could be. But a lot of our data also show that for Kansas soils, Bray and Melic 3, they're really similar in terms of, especially with the range of pH that we have there. They tend to be pretty similar in our soils. Yes, but we actually seen a drop in soil test phosphorus with the Melic 3. So in our soils, we did a lot of correlation there, and we are we feel pretty well about using Bray 1 versus Melic 3 in terms of the soil test phosphorus. But one thing that I want to emphasize also is that we started with pretty high soil test levels in this experiment. So it's something that you can see much better versus if you are already in the low levels. Obviously, that change will be much much less noticeable.
Okay, well, thank you, Dormar.
And I'd like to encourage anyone who's interested. We're going to have our Ag Research Station Management business meeting, and one of our topics will be theme for next year's symposiums. And I don't think we've covered all that we've said about long-term studies or all long-term studies have been presented, but if anybody has interest, we welcome anybody. If you have input in this business meeting, please feel free to stay around. Thank you for your attention, and see you next year.
Well, I ask the speakers right now, would you want to continue this next year? Something similar, or get specific, or there's quite a lot more research out there that would be known.
But what I'm curious on is, when you talk to Lodge and the climate guys, only interested in climate change. Is there enough?